Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. Join us as we chat in a mellow mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy.
We are back.
Hello, everybody.
On Our Thoughts Tonight.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
Where did we leave off?
We left off at, I guess, the Battle of Anjalut. The Bumbuks have stopped the Mongol invasions or into Egypt. Or Middle East, you know, Levant, whatever. So, yeah. So, I'm just considering where to take it from now. So, all right. So, Mongols are pretty dominant, but they're kind of halted in some way, I suppose. I guess we'll hit the Ottomans in a little bit. So, Mongol power is diminishing, in a way. So, they said the Ilkhanate was defeated, or they call it its form defeated, whatever, in Anjalut. Eventually, the Ilkhanate will collapse into different groups. I think the Jayarabids are one or whatever. But one thing to note, I should maybe clarify this too, is that the Mongol invasion of the Middle East, you know, really shocked a lot of, like, you know, the world, basically, and it went away. Because, like, you know, the Khwarezmians were conquered, and the Seljuks in the Anatolian Peninsula were basically subjugated as, like, vassal states. And in the weakening of the Ilkhanate, you have a lot of different smaller Seljuk states. Now, again, the Seljuks were once very powerful in the area. I should have also mentioned this. The Seljuks had a very large battle against the Georgians when they first were coming. I think the Georgians beat them. I think the Seljuks had like 200,000 soldiers. I forget. But anyway, so the Ilkhanate, you know, it's weakening, and there's a lot of smaller states in Anatolia. There's the Karas, the Saruhanids, the Germanirids or whatever, the Dokarids, all these different groups. And there's also the Osmanlis, you know, the Ottomans, basically. So they're located basically in northwestern Anatolia, I guess around Bursa, Iznik too, I suppose. Their first capital is Sute. And I guess, and eventually that region is basically called Hudevenginat. So around there. Man, there's just so much to cover, huh? Okay, so I guess I'll get to it. So the Ottomans is one of my most known about areas, so I will spend a lot of time on them.
Did you get to the Ottomans yet? No?
I'm just starting. All right. So the Ottoman state could trace its lineage back to the Seljuks, you know, with Ertuğrul and all that.
They were like a gang, weren't they?
I mean, a tribe, I suppose.
Yeah.
A gang. It's like the whole Rome thing where Rome was, I think it was this first episode where I'm like, or the second episode, I don't know, where I was like, Rome basically started out as a bunch of hoodlums, a gang.
I think the second episode was pretty much all of Rome.
Yeah. And if the Ottomans viewed themselves like basically Romans, so it would make sense. But so the Ottomans basically start expanding. The first one's Osman the First, and then there's Orhan, who really becomes like a ruler, not just a bey, like a normal ruler, but like a sultan, basically. I don't remember. I think he does title himself a sultan. You know, they're conquering local tribes. They conquered the Karasids first, and they're playing these, you know, they're allying, they're sometimes allying with the Byzantines, which I should say, I missed it, but the Byzantines, the Empire of Nicaea, will retake Constantinople from the Latin Christians, and the Byzantine Empire is restored. And so there's a lot of, but again, the Constantinople was very weakened by when the Fourth Crusade. So the Ottomans are playing these games basically with Byzantines, and they're conquering, they're saving them, they're conquering, they're saving them, and they're basically these frontier border religious warriors. They're called they're Ghazis, which are, I guess, the Muslim version of like a crusader in a way, although I don't like that equivocation. And they're slowly rising. They're crossing the straits into Europe. They're gathering some tribes in the west, and they're kind of on the rise there. All right, so let me think real quick.
What's going on in the Western Hemisphere right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know too much until we hit colonization. So, for example, the 1400s, 1500s.
Is there even much information right now?
I mean, there probably is. Like, I know, like, I guess I could, like, I'll probably hit them when we get to them, like the Aztec formation, like how the Aztecs were formed. Like, for example, they were it'd be hard for me to give the chronology of what they were doing, but like, I think the Mayans were like active in the 1200s. I don't remember though. I really don't. But I can like get into Aztec like structure once we get into with the Aztecs. Also with the Incas too. I may have to practice beforehand, but yeah. So I guess another way to put this is oh my god, see I already, there's so many things to miss. I completely missed Mansa Musa. Rewind a little.
What is that? Is this prior to the Ottomans?
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, for sure. So I should quickly mention Islamic power is has expanded, I should say. So I guess I quickly mentioned Mansa Musa. I think he was active in 1100s, 1200s. I forget. But there's a lot of larger Muslim states in Western Africa, like Mali and Songhai. And Mansa Musa was a ruler in Mali who was very famously the richest man in history, most likely. And he, on pilgrimage to Mecca, you know, he basically gave a bunch of money to people and, like, was extravagant. That's pretty much the extent I'll go with him. Someone from his dynasty, I think, was actually famous for perhaps reaching the Americas, actually.
Really?
Yeah, there was an expedition. There was a naval expedition beyond the waters, and I think three ships were sent, or a few ships were sent. I think it was a lot more than three ships, actually. And basically, like, one of them returned, and they're like, they basically confirmed they found land, which was, I mean, like, West Africa
prior to
much, like, hundreds of years before Columbus, yeah, until after the Vikings. But
I think I read about this not too long ago, vaguely.
Yeah, like they probably reached Brazil because it's really not that far. But
from where? Africa?
Yeah, West
Africa.
That's
just like a straight shot.
It's they most likely reached it. Yeah. Yeah. So so West Africa has a lot of rich kingdoms, basically. I should also clarify this before we get too far into the Ottomans, because this will be important. The Indian Ocean, I should also mention, especially around these times, and I guess maybe more so once we get to the 1400s. It's a hodgepodge of trade. So I didn't even mention the Silk Road. Oh my god. So, like, for example, you know, the Silk Road is the hypothetical trade routes that connected China and Europe and the Middle East and all that. It was good for, you know, money and ideas traveling across. That's how Buddhism spread to China. That's how Islam spread to, like, you know, Southeast Asia and all that. But I guess, especially with the Southeast Asia one, like, another part of Silk Road was the water routes in the Indian Ocean. And the Indian Ocean trade system was really, it's actually one of, like, the most interesting parts of history, because you have a lot of these different cultures interacting with each other through trade. So you have, like, the Chinese, you have, I guess you could say, the Mongols too, but I guess more like Sinicized, especially after the Ming Dynasty comes into power. But Southeast Asian kingdoms, Indian powers, Middle Eastern powers, East Africans along the Swahili coast. You have gold in Zimbabwe. You have all this stuff. And it's all this hodgepodge of Indian ocean spice trade, basically. Okay, so yeah, so that was happening there. So I guess we'll hit. Okay, so the Ottomans are rising. That's going on there. Let's maybe consider, I guess I'll maybe hit this on, like, certain events going here and here. 100 Years War starts between England and France. As I said, they were very much tied to each other. A lot of English, there's, like, you know, English, I should say, lands in France that were, like, theirs by right in a way. I should also mention, I guess, I think it was before the actual 100 Years War starts, there is a dynasty shift in France. So you had the Capetians, started from Hugh Capet in the 900s or so, I forget. They're replaced by the House of Valois. So I think they're all connected, really, like, dynastically speaking, but it's a new house. But yeah, you will have a 100 years of war. Now, 100 years of war wasn't 100 years of constant warfare. There's different phases. It starts out with some fighting, and then there's kind of this lull period, I remember, where, like, it's basically, like, the allies of England and France fighting each other. A lot of naval battles going on, but it will eventually culminate in much more brutal fighting. But I'll get to that when the time comes. So that's starting around, I think, the 1330s. I should also, of course, also mention that from the Mongol invasions, you had a lot of disease spread, and you'll have the Black Death appearing, and you know, in the 1300s, where a lot of pretty much the world is killed in China, the Middle East, and Europe. A lot of, like, a significant chunk of Europe dies.
OG COVID.
Like, the pandemic.
Isn't it like 90% of Europe got wiped out?
No, it wasn't 90%, but it was, it's either one third or two third. I think it's one third or half.
That's pretty substantial.
It's in that, like, 30 to 60 range.
That's percentage. Insane.
Yeah, I forget how much it is, but it's
could
a
you
lot.
Imagine? That's like every other person you know.
Yeah, and I guess we can go into a little in depth with it too. Like, it was, I mean, it was really bad. I mean, obviously the blame part of it too, you know, they blamed it on, like, you know, Jews, for example. They thought of it as like self-punishment or stuff like that. And like, it's actually really interesting once you get into like why they blame them. There's this whole idea of like Christian body sanctity. It gets like really almost borderline philosophical,
purity culture stuff.
Yeah, like for example, like especially in like Iberia, they believe like your health is tied to like a, you know, your faith, your spiritualness. So when you're sick, there's something going on with your spiritual side of things. And who's the one that's not, you know, spiritually aligned with you? Those guys, you know. So
yeah, classic.
Yeah. So it's horrifying, and it kills a lot of people for sure. So the Hundred Years' War starts. I guess we can maybe start hitting. Okay, so the Ottoman Empire is kind of rising there. At this point, I'm trying to like organize. Okay, so I guess we'll hit Poland, Lithuania at this point. I may be rushing a little too far ahead, though. Whatever, I'll still go with it. As I said, there were the Baltic Crusades that were going on. So you have these German Christian knights in northeastern Europe. You have a lot of Danish invaders, too, although I think for different reasons. I think it was eventually the Kalmar Union. I think it's in the 1400s. I'm not really sure, but it's basically a unification of Norway, Sweden, and Denmark into one country, although I may be skipping too far ahead in the history. Eventually, Poland and Lithuania will combine into one state. I think I'm like 100 years too skipping the gun on this, but I'll just mention it so I don't forget about it. Where Poland and Lithuania will combine to Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. You also have the Battle of Grunwald, I should say, before they combine into each other, where Poland and Lithuania will defeat the Teutonic Order. And basically, the gist of what's going on here is that the Poles and the Lithuanians are rising in power, and the Baltic Crusaders are being defeated. So that's going on there. You will also have the Battle of... I don't know how this goes. I think it's like the Battle of Los Novos de Tolodos or whatever. That was that... I can't believe I'm forgetting how... I don't remember the exact name of the battle because it's a Spanish name. I don't exactly remember, but it's a famous battle in Iberia that I had mentioned earlier, where basically the Christian kingdoms defeat the Muslim power in Iberia, and the Christian kingdoms have started pushing much more fervently down south. So there's still a significant Muslim power in Iberia, but it's definitely weakened after that battle in the 1300s. Let's see. You will also have the Yellow Turban Rebellion in China. So Mongol power has very much diminished at this point. The Ilkhanate's done. It's just a bunch of different tribes at this point. You have the Akoyunlus and the Karakoyunlus and the Dukharids. Mamluks are more powerful. Ottomans have risen. New powers all around this area. Although, again, I may be jumping ahead with the... No, I am jumping ahead with the Akoyunlus and the Karakoyunlus. But there are tribes around this area. In China, the Yuan dynasty is taken over by the Ming dynasty, so that Mongols are
how do these dynasties change over?
It's a lot of civil war, basically.
Constantly. Like, I mean, yeah. They've been around for thousands of years, so it makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And the whole, it's also like, it's civil war, it's also invading tribes, becoming Chinese, and initiating their own dynasties. So that's what the Mongols did. The Mongols invaded. They created the Yuan dynasty. You know, the Jurchens came in, Jin dynasty, or the Khitans, whatever. And then, you know, then the Tang dynasty. So, but this one is kind of internal rebellion from the Chinese, and the Ming dynasty is formed. It's led by the Hongwu Emperor. So I mentioned way back when we were talking about China and originally with the Spring and Autumn period and the Warring States period of like Confucianism, Taoism, and Legalism, and how I said that Legalism is very incoherent because the emperor does everything,
mm-hmm.
and when the emperor is gone, everything kind of falls apart. You know, that kind of happened with Qi Shuang Di, like, you know, basically 1,000 years ago before the Hanwen Emperor.
Yeah, throwback to episode 2.
Yeah. So yeah, call back, but it happens again. So the Hanwen Emperor is very legalistic. Well, he's not like super legal. Like, he has legalistic elements, and he's very strict, and you know, he does everything himself. He's a totalitarian in that aspect. But when he dies again, no one knows how to do anything because the Hanwen Emperor literally did everything.
When you say did everything, what exactly do you mean?
From what I know, like, he made all the decisions. There was like little like local power. It was concentrated on his rule.
Everything,
basically. So like the bureaucracy wasn't as like experienced because the decisions were mostly made by the Hanwen Emperor. So
okay,
yeah. So the Ming. So that's going on in China. So. But still, the Ming Dynasty has taken control. China has become China again, in a way. And Ming Dynasty is a very powerful dynasty. It's very famous for its naval expeditions, I think, under Admiral... he was a Hui Muslim, a Chinese Muslim guy. I forget his name, but...
Akbar?
Admiral Akbar, yeah. yeah, Admiral Akbar. He... So under the Ming Dynasty, yeah. So whoever this guy, I forget his name. I think it was Zheng He or something like that. I forget. But basically, he has a very large naval trade expedition across the Indian Ocean, just flaunting Chinese power. So Ming Dynasty's influence is very much all around. I could have also mentioned earlier, way back with the Tang Dynasty in the previous episode, that like their power also extended like into Central Asia too. So a lot of the earlier Chinese dynasties, they were like very much land folks in their influence, but especially with the Ming Dynasty, also earlier with the Song and the Han too, but especially with the Ming, it's like naval too. Yeah, so we're around that period at this point. Like, there's like certain things that I want to hit, but I don't know. Like, I want to pace myself before I hit them. Okay, so I guess we'll hit. Yeah. Okay. So, again, the Mongols are pretty much done, right?
This is like 1300 now.
Yeah. So we're in the 1300s. So, although am I going to the 1400s? I think I'm still in the 1300s. So, the Mongols are done, and but there is a guy who I think he tries to claim descent, but I don't think he's actually descended. But he's somewhere relation to him. But there's a new guy that comes into the scene who's basically like, I want to restore the Mongol Empire. I'm the second coming of Genghis Khan. It's all about me. And this is Timur the Lame. So he was a Turkic ruler in the ruins of the Ilkhanate and also the Golden Horde, and Russia is weakened. You know, the Golden Horde is kind of like it keeps surviving even at the structure of the Mongol Empire has done. A lot of these Russian principalities start fighting back, especially with Moscow and all that. So Timur is this new Central Asian warlord who's basically conquering a lot of territory. He conquers Persia. He's extremely brutal. He's conquering Central Asia, and he's wreaking havoc. And he would come into conflict with the Ottomans. So again, the Ottomans were also a tribal group of people who had risen into empire status. And at the Battle of Ankara, Sultan Bayezid I, the Ottomans, will get defeated by Timur the Lame. And he's called Timur the Lame because I think he had like a leg, like he was like limp or something like that. The anglicized version of his name is Timur Lame. So he's defeated by Timur and he's captured. So this leads the Ottoman Empire into the Ottoman Interregnum, where there's different claimants to the Ottoman throne. So there is, and they're all famously like very religiously named. There's Mehmet, Isa, which like, so Mehmet is like Muhammad, basically. Isa, which is basically Jesus. Musa, which is basically Moses. And Suleiman, which is basically Solomon. So very religiously named characters here. But there's a civil war that happens in the Ottoman Empire where eventually Mehmet the first will consolidate the Ottoman Empire back into its whole. And I should also mention the Byzantine Empire is still present at this time. They have whole Constantinople. It's basically centered around Constantinople. Although they do have domains in Trebizond and parts of Greece. I should have also mentioned oh man, there's just so many things to like touch up on, because like I'm going through basically military history, but there's still like other types of history too. So I guess I can mention this. With the Mongol Empire spreading, technology also spread. So for example, you know, gunpowder technology was present in China, especially through fireworks and all this stuff. And like
that came about in like 1200s, right?
I believe so, yeah. And so with the Mongol Empire, just as disease spread, so did technology spread, like the like gunpowder. And that's really important, especially once we get to the, you know, once we're, because we're getting to the Ottomans, and especially where we're eventually going to hit something called the gunpowder empires, which the Ottoman Empire was considered one of them, but there's others like the Safavids and Mughals. Gunpowder is important. I could have mentioned this earlier as well. I should have mentioned this earlier. So with the Crusades that were originally happening, a lot of the knowledge that was, you know, from the Middle East was spreading into the West. So, and also around this time, you also had a lot of cross philosophical discussion going on. You have Thomas Aquinas. So there is a return of Aristotle in Europe, basically trying to combine your religion with reason. So a lot of Christian philosophy and theology was very Neoplatonic, but it started to have an Aristotelian turn. This is important because this will lead us into, like, you know, Descartes and all this stuff, and all that stuff we'll tie way back. Like, it's like basically that philosophical history part is kind of its own tangent.
It just comes back around.
It will come back around, honestly, with Marx. But like, it's a really? Wiper. I mean, it'll hit all the time, honestly. But like,
yeah.
I think most clearly, like, I mean, if you try and trace it by lineage, okay, Aquinas, Descartes, you know, empiricists and, you know, rationalists, culminating in Kant, Hegel, Marx, you know, Soviet Union. I mean, like, you kind of like trace it all the way back, mm-hmm. anyway. Yeah, so
but that's happening because the Ottomans are pushing this empiricism back into Europe in the 1300s, is what you're saying. Like, it starts to proliferate in that era.
No. Like, no, I'm already more like clarifying something earlier, like with the Crusades. Okay. So before the Ottomans, when the first three Crusades were really happening, the knowledge, and also like not even just for the Crusades, but just like, especially in like Iberia too, like the knowledge from the Muslims were being introduced into Europe, basically.
Were the Muslims the ones that were harboring like the ancient Greek texts?
Yeah. Yeah, like for example, a lot of Muslims, I were going back hundreds of years before talking about, but like they were like very Aristotelian, at least like the big ones.
Oh, really?
Like Avicenna.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Or was it Averroes or Avicenna? I always forget. Like, I think it's it's Averroes. Yeah, I keep saying Avicenna. It was Averroes who was very Aristotelian. Ibn Rushd. Yeah, Ibn Sina is Avicenna, and he was, I think, more Platonic from what I remember. But I mean, you know, long story short, they're engaging with these ancient Greek texts, and they're developing it off of them. And then the Christians will do the same.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Interesting. Yeah. So it is, and it will, you know, it unites all the cultures in a sense. All right. So let's see. So where we're at. Ottoman Empire, Mehmed the First has just reconquered his empire.
It's about 1,000 years prior Aristotle, wasn't it?
What do you mean?
Like, Aristotle was around like 400 BC, was it? Or was it?
I think it was like 300 BC.
In that area, though,
yeah,
right?
300 BC. So this is like, about a little more than 1,000 years, but 1,000.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's impressive. And, like, obviously, like, yeah, I mean, Aristotle, man, like, what a G.
But, seriously.
I mean, there's a whole
quote. I mean, even still.
Yeah, I mean, like, even, like, and also Plato, too. Like, people, like, shit on Plato, but I think he's important, too. Like, there's Whitehead's quote that, like, all of philosophy is basically footnotes to Plato. And then with Aristotle, like, and there's, like, people that are like, oh, yeah, Aristotle got everything wrong. And it's like, I don't know about that.
I don't think he got a damn thing wrong.
Because, well,
like,
I mean,
most contemporary philosophy is, like, a tangent off of what he already figured out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say he, like, this is stuff on women and, like, you know,
yeah, cosmology. No, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm just talking about, like, the core ideas, I guess.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the logical syllogisms we still use, like his whole idea of like potentiality and actuality. There's four causes: efficient, material, formal, and final cause. There, I mean, it's not like don't know how realistically we take that nowadays, but like it still enlightens modern thought. Yeah, super important. Also for science too, obviously. Yeah, so Aristotle had a huge influence in the Middle Ages too, to rising thinkers. We will, you know, and eventually this will go into, you know,
even politics too, by the way. Yeah, that's another thing. Like democracy, ethics, and contemporary democracy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, although one thing with Aristotle though, like, you know, he was a virtue ethicist kind of guy. So like you the whole point of ethics and like society, well, not about society, but, like the whole point of like someone's life is basically about their purpose, about values, you know, these things that you strive for. Where a lot of modern ethics that back up politics are not based on virtues, or like they're not as based on virtues, you know, they're based on like the rights of people. You know, I don't care what you want to do in your life as long as you know, X, Y, and Z. So there is a split from that Aristotelian background.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know, it still influences us to a certain extent. Let's see, where are we at? So Black Death ravaging across Europe, 100 years war going on, Poland-Lithuanian Commonwealth, Ottomans are back together. yeah, a lot of stuff.
Ming Dynasty back together.
Yeah, Ming Dynasty is out over here. I guess I'll go with this one. So India, again, I really haven't touched on India too much, mostly because it's not where I don't know too much about it, but my chronology here is very messy. But from what I know, after Timur dies and like the whole, you know, essence of the Timurid Empire is gone, you will have, I may be jumping ahead to the 1400s-1500s just for the sake of India because my chronology is not good, but you will have, for example, the Mughal Empire rise in India, which is claims descent from, I think, under Babur the First. He's very militaristic from what I remember. He claims descent from Genghis Khan. He claims descent from Timur. The Mughals is basically like a way, it's basically like a linguistically altered version of like the Mongol, basically, empire. So the Mughal Empire conquers pretty much almost the entirety of India. And Babur the First is important. It's also another ruler that I forget his name, who's, I think, much more peaceful. Or I think the Mughals, you have, like, for example, the Taj Mahal built. So India in this way becomes very Islamicized. I mean, it had already been Islamicized, especially northern India. As I mentioned, the Delhi Sultanate, there were other groups, like Ghurids, Ghaznavis, and all that stuff. But it really, under the Mughals, a lot of India is consolidated. So, you know, a lot of people are dead. And you could say the survivors get the benefits. So there's a lot more open land. You know, peasants start fighting for their rights more. And I didn't even really touch on this, but like medieval society in Europe is feudalistic. Again, there's different types of feudalism, but, and you know, the Islamic world was feudalistic in their own way. They had the Iqta system, which is very similar. But you know, you have like your serfs, you're on there on their land. They are, you know, subservient to a lord, you know, in a castle. Eventually these wooden castles become stone castles because of like Viking invaders and all this stuff. But with the Black Death, you know, these serfs are able to fight for their rights a lot more, and they're able to get a lot more. Eventually you have like a merchants class kind of rising eventually. I guess it's a little bit earlier though. Yeah, so the Black Death kind of has a good consequence in that the survivors reap the benefits in a way. So there's more flourishing going on post Black Death, essentially. There's also
Renaissance.
Yeah. For example, the Renaissance, again, I guess we were just set this up over the break. There are people who claim that the Renaissance started around 1300s, although I think most people consider
kind of as a reaction almost to the Black Death. That's what I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, I would believe that. And then
not necessarily a reaction, but like, you know, a revitalization after a series of like, you know, such a drastic period.
Yeah. And
inevitably realistically, kind of like the baby boom after World War II.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much validity there is to that personally.
I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, what I've heard a lot is like after the Ottomans take Constantinople, which I'll get to, like, a lot of the thought from the Byzantines will flow into Italy, also fueling the Renaissance. So 1400s, Renaissance starts, basically. You can probably speak more about this, but, like, you know, art, it's a whole focus on, like, the human individual. There are homages to religion, but there's also homages to things that were not so Christian, I think, from what I remember.
Humanism.
Humanism, yeah. That's the word to use. There's, you know, the Renaissance in Italy, but there's also late starters that you could say happen in, like, in, you know, France and England, the Northern Renaissance, sometimes, I think, from what I remember. So it's spread across Europe for a large extent. I guess we'll hit this. So the Hundred Years' War, which, I just don't know too much about the Hundred Years' War, unfortunately, but eventually you'll hit that, and there, you know, you'll hit that. Sean would have been good for this part of the episode, but eventually you hit that point in the Hundred Years' War. So England and France have been fighting for like 100 years, basically. Although I think it's a lot more than that. And, you know, the English are very successful for the majority of the war, especially towards the end, from what I remember. Like, Paris is taken, you know, like, France is, like, almost gone, you know, like, Burgundy, Aquitaine, you know, like, Normandy, like, France is, like, surrounded, basically. But, you know, famously, you have, like, you know, Joan of Arc, for example, you know, the French girl who was, like, you know, symbolically helpful for the French, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, big battles around this time. I guess I might be mixing up being different times and whatnot, like, Battle of Calais, Battle of Agincourt, you know, a lot, basically, like, English have a lot of victories, but towards the end, the French will start winning more. And at the end of the Hundred Years' War in 1453, the French are victorious. So the French win the Hundred Years' War. The Valois dynasty has defeated the Plunge. The Plunge. Oh my god. Let's see. So where we at now? So quick clarification. So remember, Poland, Lithuania, Commonwealth is present in Eastern Europe. At this point, the Russians have basically kicked out Golden Horde influence. You know, there's a lot of. There's still hordes, you know, in South Central Russia, and there's a lot of wars between, you know, these Eastern European groups and them, but they're not, like, they don't serve them anymore. There was a whole, like, scenario, I think, where, like, a priest was involved. I don't exactly know the specifics, but there's different, you know, groups. There's, like, the Muscovites, there's Novgorod, so that's in Eastern Europe. So the Ottomans will take over Constantinople. They had already tried and failed, but they will take them. And Constantinople was attacked, like, you know, throughout its history, obviously, and it was taken over by the Latins. It was attacked by the Arabs, been defeated. But the Turks will take it. And because, you know, Constantinople was no longer the city that it once was, especially because of, you know, the Fourth Crusade, Ottomans take it, making this new capital, move from Adrianople to Constantinople, and boom. New Empire. Now, I'm going to try my best not to, like, go super into depth and, like, extend this, you know, longer than it needs to be. But the Ottomans start, you know, titling themselves as Caesars. The Orthodox Church is still present, but it's, as you see, eventually it will be transitioned into Russia. People after Constantinople, you know, is taken, you know, the Byzantine thinkers, I guess you could say, flow into Italy, I guess, helping fuel more of that Renaissance. I don't think it should probably say that it created the Renaissance, but it helped fuel it, I suppose. And that's a big deal. So the Ottomans are extremely powerful. They start conquering more. They take Belgrade. They consolidate more of Anatolia, and they're definitely on the rise. And they're still, on the rise. Let's think. So, there are still, like, other territories of the Byzantine Empire that survived, you know, the fall of Constantinople. I think Trebizond was one of them, Epirus was another, and, eventually they're taken around, around the 1470s. No remnants of the Byzantine Empire, are around. In Japan, you're gonna have around the 1400s, the Onin War. So, as I mentioned, you know, there are different clans in Japan, you know, and but it's all really headed under the imperial family. And as centuries have gone by, they become more and more established. They consolidate the island of Japan, you know, out of this rises, you know, a warrior class of samurai. And in the Onin War, there is basically two clans that fight each other. and out of the chaos of that war, that civil war in Japan, you'll enter into like the late 1400s onwards into the Sengoku Jidai, basically the Warring States period for Japan, where a bunch of local rulers are. And I should probably also clarify, like, this whole idea, as a whole idea of a shogun, and I probably should have reminded myself of the specifics of it, but like a shogun, so in Japan, you know, you have like your ruler that's from the royal family. You can't change the royal family. In China, you can change dynasties, but in Japan, power comes from that family. It's like, no matter who you are, they're like religious, they're descended from the gods, but you can certainly influence them. And as Japan's history went on, you know, these military leaders were powerful. These people had to like hire samurai to protect against like local bandits that were going on. And from this, these powerful military leaders, you have the emergence of like the shoguns, which are these military leaders. So once we hit into the Warring States, a lot of these different warlords all vying for power. And that will basically be fueling Japan's history for the next 150 years. Okay, so I guess we're getting close to 1492. Ottoman takeover Constantinople. It's a big event.
Big time.
For some people, it's considered the end of the Middle Ages. Some people like to Middle Ages, like the three areas that are considered the end of the Middle Ages are 1453, 1492, and 1500s. 1500s is kind of like a nice clean date. Most people go for 1492. Some people like to go 1453.
Where are we at right now?
We're kind of late 1400s right now. So I'm kind of jumping around. So
1400s. Okay. Yeah.
So I think some people might even say
1491.
Da Vinci is alive. Yeah, the Renaissance is going on. The Ottoman takeover of Constantinople is important because a lot of the trade that flowed to the east is more difficult. There are still the Mamluks. The Venetians are still trading with the Mamluks, from what I remember, and that's all fine and dandy. But Italian merchants, Ottomans, it's just trade isn't the greatest way to go eastward, like through there. So especially Iberia, who has Iberian kingdoms have consolidated Iberia a lot more. You have Portugal and you have Spain. So Spain really forms when Kingdom of Castile and Kingdom of Aragon joined together, Ferdinand and Isabella, into one country of Spain, basically. But really, then the major figure here is Prince Henry the Navigator in Portugal, who starts this Portuguese idea of expansion. So this whole idea of trying to sail around Africa, so eventually the Portuguese will sail around Africa. But even before Columbus, you have really the Portuguese leading the expeditions really into trying to go to the east. Different border forts are built along Africa. And in a way, it's almost like the reconquering of Iberia extended further. And then, which will hit us to 1492, which will probably end this episode here, where there's two major events, obviously. One is, there's some important events in 1491 too, but I forget, honestly. You know, the last remnant of the Muslim power in Spain, the Emirate of Granada, is conquered by Spain. So Iberia is consolidated. And, eventually they will start pushing into North Africa a little bit too. But, there's a lot of like Ottoman Spanish fights around this time. And the other important part, obviously, is Columbus. Italian guy, hired by the Spanish, finds what he thinks to be Asia, really are the Americas. So that kind of leaves us off at the end of the Middle Ages. So to give the brief statement of the world right now, England and has lost against France, but it's I guess you could say is doing its own thing. Spain's definitely on the rise. France has also grown in power for sure. Holy Roman Empire, we're gonna get really interesting with the Protestant Reformation coming up soon. Ottoman Empire, it's still on the rise.
Also, the Stiegel Brewery opened in 1492, believe it or not. That's what it says here.
Hell, that's crazy.
Salzburg.
As I said, guys, we're not looking this up during it, but we are now. I guess I could have mentioned this. Southeast is a lot of powerful Southeast Asian kingdoms. Ayutthaya is one.
What about Japan? You said you were going to mention Japan.
Yeah, I did. So currently Japan's in the Civil War. After the Onin War, they are now in the Warring States period. So a lot of samurai-based factions are fighting each other. They'll be consolidated in the next episode under Oda Nobunaga, Hideyoshi, and Ieyasu. But we'll get to that next episode. Let's see. Yeah, so that's pretty much where we're at. And also, obviously, the most important part, arguably, the beginning of colonialism. That will get us into pretty much the rest of the world history.
Any final thoughts for this episode?
I guess I'll say, I think we're entering into, like, my favorite part of history, the
1500s. 1500s,
like,
why
there's
is that?
So much, like, so many things happen, like Protestant Reformation, higher rates of colonialism, Mediterranean piracy, forming of Russia, Charles V, Henry VIII.
Bach.
Yeah, Bach. That's right, you don't even have to go military history. I mean, obviously, the Ottomans are at their peak. I mean, there's just, like, so much. Like, the Spanish Armada, Spain conquers Portugal. I'm already jumping ahead. Netherlands revolts. Like, so many things happen in the 1500s. Like, I think... when was Descartes? Wasn't Descartes in the 1500s? 1500s?
So, like, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So, like... So, yeah. Anyway. My thought... Yeah, that's what my thoughts. Any last thoughts for you? Final thoughts? How about this? What's, like... Because you were basically the listener.
Yeah.
Like, what, for, I guess, from how I explained it, my messy explaining of it all, what's your gist from, like, the late and high period of the Middle Ages, which is basically what we just talked about?
It seems like a lot of, it's not as concentrated power, like Rome, for example.
Yeah.
Power isn't as concentrated like Rome and the Chinese dynasties.
Yeah.
It's like factions.
Yeah.
Moves on from there, but it's like smaller, you know.
Yeah, more localized,
and obviously population is growing, so
yeah that's also a whole other point, is like population's on the rise. Like, over the Dark Ages, you know, Western cities were very, very, you know, they weren't as populous, but like Paris starts to rise, mm-hmm. London starts to rise, Constantinople was obviously big, but then it dips a lot, and now it's going to come back a little bit.
And then, like, you have the impact of technologies like fireworks and firearms and so on. So that's going to change the game, obviously.
Yeah, like, we're going to start entering into the pike and shot era, where, like, you have, like, muskets, basically, you know?
Yeah. And then modern politics are coming about slowly, you know, like the Magna Carta. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the most interesting thing, I would say, is, like, I never really thought about this as much as, like, maybe I didn't think about it because I had never experienced anything like it until recently, but the Black Death is pretty significant. Oh. Like, when you, prior to COVID, you know, you read about the Black Death, you're like, that's what happened before, you know, but, like, we see how quickly these things can spread. Now we all understand firsthand.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's pretty amazing. I think it was, like, 200 million or something died.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, and, like, a lot of what they did, like, with their practices were, like, some of them were actually sophisticated. But I remember what we studied this in the class a little bit, like, some of the techniques they used in trying to prevent it were somewhat significant, like, somewhat sophisticated, but obviously had others, like, were, like, bonkers ideas, you know? But one thing was for sure, like, they knew you could do something with a disease, you know, like, there was a spiritual side of things, but there was a medical side too. Like, there is something you can physically do to try and help it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, sometimes those were really bad ideas.
Yeah. But they at least understood that it wasn't like that's where the humanism is coming about.
Yeah,
like, it's not paranormal or supernatural.
Yeah.
It partially is,
but, like, because that's the thing, because it's so tied with, like I said, like, the spiritual and the body is so tied. There is a spiritual aspect, but there's still that bodily aspect too. You can still do something physical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought about it like that, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we will see you on the next one, and we will get through this.
We'll get through
together.
This.
Our thoughts tonight.
A song that has no meaning at all. That doesn't touch a personal nerve or heed a social call. That knows no up or down. That has no right or wrong. That doesn't need a reason to waste some time with song, just like that old time.
rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I'll sing ba ba cha ba ben. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, to sing a song that doesn't let it all hang out, that doesn't wave any flag or have any slogan to shout, that knows no east or west, that has no left or right, that doesn't throw any stones or look for any fight, just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I sing ba ba cha ba ben. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Won't woo you like a lover or promise a brand new start, that doesn't preach of rain and fire or heed any higher call, that doesn't need a reason to mean nothing at all, just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I sing ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Just like that old time rock and roll with the easy chords and a touch of soul. Give me old time rock and roll, and I sing ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Ba 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 ba. Whoa, whoa, whoa.